Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. There's nowhere on earth Erica Forensic won't go to take you out of your head and into the great wild world. And this time she traveled up to Greenland. It's the backdrop for her new story, a country that's mostly ice-capped, where July is the only month where temperatures reach above freezing. Today we discuss how a couple of turtles frozen mid-stroke in an ice-filled lake inspired her story of Girl in Ice. Erica shares details of her month-long research trip to Greenland and what the iceberg graveyard is. She also talks about how she developed the framework for a new language, some of the research she did, and why she writes her first draft before traveling for research. She also shares why we should face our fears and why we are much braver than we think. So let me tell you a little about Erica. Erica Forensic considers her MA in creative writing from Boston University just the beginning of her literary education. Her 35 years of writing, and she wrote novels, short stories, essays, she ghostwrote. She did 10 years of stand-up and sketch comedy, as well as dozens of screenplays and a brief filmmaking stint. But she considers all of that as her boots-on-the-ground training. Great training, by the way. And her work has appeared in Salon and the Boston Globe, as well as on National Public Radio. So here's my guest, Erica Forensic, and her new book, Girl in Ice. Erica Forensic, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you because this is a very different kind of story, and there's so much to talk about because you travel to Greenland to research it, and the story you set up there, which is quite unusual too. I love when location is part of the story, and you definitely do that in your books. But we haven't spoken before, Erica, so I just wanted to share a little of your background with our listeners, and I was really interested to hear that you did stand-up comedy for a decade.
Yeah, so I started off being a visual artist. I was a painter in my early 20s, and then I wanted to be a novelist. I wrote some novels. They didn't go anywhere because they were so bad. And then I think from there I segued into stand-up because it was a way of instant publication, you know, like right away you knew that you weren't funny, you know, like right away.
Yeah, that instant gratification, yeah.
Yeah, just publication or validation or just some way of expressing myself. I learned a lot. I learned to think on my feet. I learned to write constantly because, you know, you need to come up with new jokes all the time and deal with all kinds of audiences and reactions and, yeah. So, but from there, I went to screenwriting for 10 years, and then from there I learned structure, which I'd been very stubborn to learn in my early days of writing novels, and then I went back to writing novels. So yes, yeah, so stand-up was definitely formative, and I, well, people say, oh, you did stand-up, and I say, well, you know, what good does it do me that I did it? But I guess the more I think about it, the more I realize it did help. It did help in many ways.
I would think one of the things it helped you with is people's feedback, because they can be brutal in comedy clubs, let's face it.
Oh, my God.
And you have to learn how to deal with that, just as you do when you're a writer.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and that's a whole other, you know, podcast, you know, dealing with reviews and the fact that not everyone is going to love you, which you know at some level, but... You know, when you go to publish a book, you just feel like, how can people not love this book? You know, it's just human nature as an artist. But
right.
Yeah, it's brutal. It was brutal doing stand-up. You were only as good as your last performance, you know?
That's right. It's so true of many things in life, though, isn't it? But with comedy, you're kind of doing it every day almost, I guess. Yeah. So you decide to go back to novel writing after you've been script writing for another decade after that. What drove
you...
Which makes
me 100 years old, but that's
okay. No. You've just been
productive.
So what made you go back to novel writing? It sounds like this was really at your heart, at your core.
Yeah, absolutely it was. I did screenwriting, meaning I worked for a company as a director of development, trying to find scripts to turn into films, and it was just zooey, but it made me read like 1,000 scripts and understand structure, but I also understood that I'm not collaborative, I want to work on my own and make my own editorial decisions and have the product be my own, and so I went back to novels.
Yeah, I just think that must be the hard thing about especially TV writing, when they have to churn out story after story every week. And, they're lucky if they get their name on the credits at the end of it.
Well, not only that, look at all the crap that's on TV. And I can't imagine some of it's fabulous, of course. Oh, my God, it's the age of television. But a lot of it is a result of everyone compromising.
Yeah.
And when everyone compromises, then, you get sort of this middle of the road, not very interesting stuff.
Right.
You don't want to piss off your boss or whatever. And
yeah.
So.
So you've written several successful books now. The River at Night, Into the Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
The latest we're talking about today is Girl in Ice, and I definitely want to talk about the travel you've done for that, but let's look at the book first of all, and give our listeners a story synopsis. And it begins with Val Chesterfield. She's a linguist. She gets an unexpected email from a facility up in the Arctic begging her to go up there. So tell us why she's going up there.
So the story is about, you're right, the story is about Val Chesterfield. She's an American linguist, and she is tasked to go to a very remote climate research center off the coast of Greenland, where a girl has thawed from a glacier alive, speaking a language no one understands. 8 months before the story begins, Val's twin brother, Andy, who was a climate scientist, walked out Arctic night, 50 degrees below zero, and froze to death. So you're right, the story begins is Val gets the email from Wyatt, the only other guy up there, when, Andy walks out there and dies, with this information that they found this girl. And in the email is a clip of the girl's voice. And, Val would love to ignore this email. She has her own issues. She has a pretty severe anxiety disorder. She's only comfortable in a few places, her house, her place at work. But when she hears this girl's voice, she cannot ignore it. She doesn't understand the word the girl is saying, but there's a lot of pain in it and trauma and just this cry for help. So she gets over it and gets on a plane and goes several planes and goes to Greenland.
Right. So she's partly going there to solve this big question. Who is this girl? Where did she come from? How did she freeze? And she also has, mm-hmm. well, her father had really nagging doubts about the death of her brother. So there's that
exactly.
mystery too. In fact, her dad gave her an ultimatum, didn't he? Don't come back if you don't. If you don't go, don't come back and see me.
Yeah, and that broke her heart. On top of everything else as well, because she wasn't the favorite child. Her brother Andy was the most charismatic and outgoing, and she's sort of the one that hung back. So yeah, this was a huge impetus for her to go. Her dad, her aging dad. So.
Yeah. So she's a linguist, as we said, and she specializes in dead Nordic languages, and nobody understands a word this young girl is saying. And of course, Nordic languages are super old. They're one of the oldest, I believe. But
yeah.
But so she heads off up there. But tell us where you got this idea of the girl frozen in ice. I read that you
where
were...
Where did I get this crazy idea?
I read that you saw a couple of turtles that were frozen in ice.
Yeah, so, I was walking in the woods behind my house. I live in the northeast of the United States, and in the winter of 2018, and there was a pond, and in the pond there were 3 juvenile painted turtles, and they were frozen solid mid-stroke. And they didn't look alive, but they didn't look dead either. So I ran home and Googled it. It turns out there's a lot of creatures that can actually do this. And I don't mean just torpid. I mean frozen. Wood frogs, which are just waking up around here now. Alligators, some alligators. There's even microscopic creatures called this creature called a tardigrade or water bear that can freeze to 359 degrees below zero for
wow.
a year.
Wow.
Saw him out. He's just fine. You can shoot this little guy up into space. It's kind of spooky. And so that was one impetus. Another impetus is I love Arctic settings. I love science and language. I love writing on the edge of what, I guess, on the edge of what is real and what isn't or what could be. So I love having the reader possibly say, maybe that could happen.
You know, right.
Maybe that could happen.
Right.
And I guess there's a scene in Frankenstein, a very old black and white version, where he is stumbling. He is done with humanity, right? And he's beaten and bloodied and bruised, and he's stumbling into this blizzard at Mont Blanc, and he's disappearing. He's this black, blocky silhouette. And just that feeling of, I don't know, it just broke my heart. I'm still trying to figure out why. I'm sure it has to do with our inhumanity to the variety of
right.
humans that exist. And,
right.
But something about that feeling I felt I wanted to put in the book. Although there's no Frankenstein in the book.
No, there's no Frankenstein in the book. We don't need one. It's thrilling enough as it is. And I have to tell you, when I was a little girl, I hated Frankenstein movies because I'd always cry. I felt so sorry for him.
Yes,
like,
as a very sensitive little girl, you must have
I'm like, why is everybody
right?
being so mean to him?
I was sorry for him. And I mean, all he's trying to do is be, you know? And
right.
He's made how he's made, and... Anyway,
so let's look.
Fine motor skills.
right. So let's look at the character of Val a little bit more, Val Chesterfield, because she feels safest in her office, and she's happiest when she's alone with her books and her charts and you know, researching and being all nerdy. You know, I love that too. How did you build her character? Why did you build her that way?
Well, I think as writers, we're all trying to find the conflict, you know? It's all about finding... And then, you know, you need the outer journey and the inner journey. And I think for her, part of her inner journey was to overcome this fear of the unknown or just fear of leaving her comfort space. You know, if I made her a superhero who just went out and solved the problem, I guess it just would have been a lot less interesting to me.
Mm, yeah.
I had to dig a little because I'm more like, you know, I just want to get out there.
Right.
And I don't have people. I mean, the number one question people ask me is, "Weren't you afraid?" And you know, the answer is the word fear is this big blobby emotion. It can just encompass so many emotions, you know, dread, apprehension, and so on. And I was afraid. I mean,
and you're talking, of course, when you went to Greenland to do your research.
Yeah,
when
I went to Greenland, but also when I went to the jungle for Into the Jungle. I mean, I especially for Into the Jungle. I mean, I spent a month in the Peruvian Amazon doing research for that book, and before I even left, I read dozens of books on the jungle, and I scared the crap out of myself. I almost didn't get on the plane, you know, and my poor husband said, bye, hope I see you.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and I got there, and I won't take you through the whole thing, but I mean, my first day on the trail with my guide, my Peruvian native guide, who started hunting at age 9. I was talking, like I'm talking to you.
Right, and this is from your previous book. This is from your previous book. Just to be clear.
This is from my previous book, but it's about fear. So he said, Erica, you gotta shut up. He said it in a nice way. Why? And he said, because I'm listening. And I said, what are you listening for? And he said, well, you know, for example, there's a troop of monkeys half a mile away and they're on their way here. And he could tell me what kind they were, or whether peaty or woolly or whatever, you know, how far away they were, he knew why they were coming. He could hear with his feet. He could tell me, one day he told me we have about 3 minutes to find shelter because there's a herd of white-lipped peccary, which is kind of big, coming in our direction, and they're really stupid. They'll just run over, you know?
Right.
So there was fear, but there was like, oh, this is what we do. You know, this is what we do. We increase your awareness.
Yes, and it's a great growth experience. It's, you know, especially when you put yourself a little bit on the edge and stretch things. So there are lots of places, going back to Girl in Ice, there are lots of places that somebody could have found a frozen girl. You know, there's North and South poles. Why Greenland? What drew you to Greenland?
Well, first is really a practical reason. I couldn't get to Antarctica fast enough for my book deadline. I was fascinated by, continue to be fascinated, as many people are, by, you know, both places.
Right.
I also needed an indigenous population. I also needed certain animals to be there. So in the end, Greenland was a really good choice. I mean, it wasn't that hard to get to compared to Antarctica. And it was turned out to be just, like, the best choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at pictures of it. You know how it is. It's like you look at pictures of just going into the West Coast, and you see, it's just so the way the sky is. You know, oh, that's the sky.
Right.
You know, and you know when I fly back east, I'm like, well, you know, you feel a little contained. In our setting here, as beautiful as it is.
There's a stunning photograph on your website of that big arch, icebergs.
Yeah,
absolutely stunning. And of course, it's hard to put them in perspective because there's nothing around to measure them with usually, you know, but they're huge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're like...
Absolutely huge. I didn't put the one with a little tiny boat under it, which would have shown you... See, I took that picture from my kayak. There's another picture where there's a little tiny boat, and that's the other kind of group of explorers. And they were under the ice. I mean, that arch could have broken at any time.
Mm-hmm. I heard that when you were out kayaking, you went out to Iceberg Graveyard. I'm going to assume that's because there are a lot of icebergs there. I don't know. But you were told if you hear a noise, point your kayak toward it. So tell us why.
Yeah. So the Iceberg Graveyard, that's the casual way of referring to this fjord, which is just simply an inlet with extremely deep water, like half a mile deep, where for whatever reason the water currents wash in these massive, massive, massive icebergs. They're like 10 stories tall, a couple blocks long, carved by wind and waves into these crazy shaped arches like you saw on my website.
Right.
And we're kayaking there, and all the time you're hearing explosions, you know, muffled far away, like gunshots, and those are things breaking, falling, turning. Icebergs flip, by the way. Sometimes they just turn over. It's the most weird thing. But anyway, we were told by our guide that if we heard something close to us, like an explosion, to turn our kayaks towards the sound. Otherwise, the wave that would have been created would have breached our kayaks and we would be in the water.
Right.
And you know, it's like, you know, another lesson in fear, you know, is, okay, here we are, and that's, what are we going to do, leave? I mean, you know, so I guess that's what we'll do. Everybody just looked at each other.
It's interesting to learn that kayak is actually a natural word from Greenland, and we just adopted the natural word, because I'm a kayaker myself, so I can appreciate how it must have been, I think, you know, stupendous for one to see that scenery, but also a little scary, because if you do tip in, even if you've got, you know, Arctic gear on, it can still be very dangerous.
Yeah, no guarantees. Actually, kayaks were invented by Greenlanders. They used to be originally made of whale ribs and stretched seal skin, and they say men's because it's usually a man hunter wearing the anoraks, were custom sewn by the women to be watertight, so if they flipped, they could just flip over and survive, or if there wasn't a thing. But yeah, just to be there was absolutely stunning and very difficult to capture with really any camera. I mean, I was so busy taking notes and
right.
You know, crazy.
Tell me if this is true. I heard that you write a first draft of your novel before you go do your research and travel. Is that right?
Yeah, people often think that, you know, I go to Greenland and get an idea. Well, I can't afford that amount of time and money, you know.
Right.
No, I get an idea, and I can talk about vetting an idea. That's another subject as a writer. You know, you really need an idea that you love and that has legs and that you can live with for 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? An idea that you can be passionate about because you got to live with it for that long. You know, I'm talking to you. You know, and I have to sound excited about it. I am excited about it, but you
well,
know,
I can
you
tell.
Have to love an idea that you know because if you're going to anyway, I get an idea, make sure it's the one I want to work on. And I work on an outline for about 3 or 4 months. Then I mean, the outline for this was about 100 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write the book, and then I go on the trip.
Right.
That doesn't mean I don't read up and Google, but, you know, I want to go with a very clear idea of what I'm looking for. It's a big, beautiful world out there. You know, I have to know who to interview, what questions to ask. What I need to do, same was in, you know, into the jungle. I needed to interview a shaman. I found one. I mean, that was a big deal. But it's work, but I love it.
So you go do all this research, and then the island where Valerie goes to look at this girl and try and figure out what language she's speaking and where she's from, and look into her brother's death. The island is actually fictitious, right?
Yes, because I don't like to have my feet to the fire with facts about an actual place.
I can understand that, because things change so quickly these days. It's like by the time you've published it, it's like out of date almost.
Well, it's not so much out of date. You get people who actually live there, and they write to you, and they say, you got this so wrong, and, you know, I don't need that, And the same was true in Into the Jungle. I made up my own tribe. I made up my own. And in The River at Night, I made up my own river, and no one noticed it.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Well, you made up this language for Girl in Ice. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal, too. So tell us how you went about that. Did you actually speak with linguists as part of your research, and how did that go?
Yes, I have. I'm lucky enough, I have a couple of linguist friends. I spoke to them, and I said, what do you do if you have absolutely no clues with a language? And they said, well, it'd be like talking to a baby. You know, you show them an object, and then you know, simple nouns and verbs, and then a bag of marbles for many, and one marble for one. And then, but, you know, the fact is, and I listened to all kinds of Finnish, Swedish, Danish, of course, Greenlandic, you know, to try to hear what I wanted to sound like, but not be but different, you know?
Yeah.
Similar, but different. And, you know, and I had to create this language that this girl spoke, and she refused to speak in the beginning because two people need to want to communicate, and she was very traumatized in the beginning, and it took her a while to trust Val,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you imagine yourself waking up, you know, frozen. Just like,
I know.
What the heck happened?
Where are my parents? Where are my clothes that I recognize?
Yeah, and to make it realistic, to make it realistic then is also an art, so job well done.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk about the food they eat there. There's three different languages there, as I understand it, and I have to get this in because I just loved it when I heard it. I heard you say that the Greenlandic word for climate change is a friend, or remind me what it was.
Yeah,
it just
slipped
my head.
Of course. So, and I don't trust myself to speak Greenlandic words. They're very, very long. Longest word is 26 letters, And it might be something like mean something, and there are morphemes, which is a unit of meaning. It might be something like, I saw the caribou, but it saw me, so I didn't kill it. You know, that might be a unit of meaning. But in any case, the term for climate change in East Greenlandic is a friend acting strangely.
Yeah. I think that's, I don't know why, but that really struck me as being quite powerful. It's like, you know, because of the way they live up there and their heritage, that there's more of a connection, I think, with the land than most of, Western civilization.
Yes, of course. I mean, for them, it's a hunting and subsistence culture. Mm. Now, I live in the Northeast, and we have a snowstorm here, and even though it's like, we've had snowstorms here forever, and we're calling it a bomb cyclone, it's not, it's snow. And we just don't have this closeness to nature that they do, and they don't do it to be close to nature, they do it to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to understand what kind of ice they're looking at in order to hunt. There are over 170 words for ice. Why? Because they need to speak to each other about whether or not a kind of ice is safe. For example, there might be a kind of ice that would hold a man but not a polar bear, and it would be enough that a seal could break through for a breathing hole. So yeah, that's good.
Interesting.
Ice.
Interesting.
You know, that's good hunting ice.
Yeah. So did you, when you were up there, you were in some kind of camp, right?
Yes.
And in the open, the furthest north I've been is Churchill, Manitoba, where the polar bears roam around. Fabulous. I loved it. Oh my God, I loved it. I actually didn't want to leave. I don't know how long that would have lasted, because I also like city lights and stuff. But I just,
you
I
might
loved,
have woken up one day and said, get me out of here.
Yeah, yeah. But I loved the sense of isolation, because it's very different to, I think it's very different to loneliness. There was this solitude and isolation there that just was... I can't put it into words. I've tried many times, and I can't put it into words. Did you feel that same kind of thing?
No, I was.
You were much further north than me, too.
But is this? You know, we feel more lonely amongst other people than we do in a place like that. Mm. And I'm not sure why, but I just never felt better. And I think. And also the air, I don't know how it was in Manitoba, but I mean, the air, I don't know what I'm breathing now, but it's not air.
Right,
you know,
it is,
you breathe, the air is so clean and so just alive. And I felt like I was high the whole time just from breathing this air.
Yeah.
But the sense of isolation is, it's the opposite of loneliness.
Mm. And so did you try any of the food up there? Because obviously they eat different diets. They need more fat than we need down here. They eat, you know, whale and seal and all that stuff.
I was a total wimp. you know, I was a little spoiled there. We're Americans. We're not actually, people were there from all over the world, but we were not served blubber or... Anything native, really. Lots of fish. But yeah.
Yeah.
Although I did visit, I did an interview with the mayor of a certain town, and his family was cooking dinner, and none of it was recognizable to me as anything. You know, there was a certain walrus dish. There's a certain gourmet walrus dish where it's the contents of the walrus's stomach left to ferment, and from that you make a sauce. I passed on it.
Yeah. I say I'll try anything once, and I have tried a lot of things that I'd never eat again. But
Did you try blubber?
No. Well, when I went, it was, you can only go on those tours to go out to see the polar bears. And so they kind of feed you while they're going. So it was Americanized.
Yeah.
This book, I mean, is a good book in itself, right? It's a good story, Girl in Ice. But it also set me on this journey of researching more about Greenland, and I actually signed up with a couple of tour companies to get information from them. So, and I can...
Oh, good for you.
I can tell from your excitement that I think I'd really enjoy the experience. So I'm wondering what you brought back from that experience of being at camp. You were out there for, I think, almost a month. What did you bring back? How did it change you, do you think?
It just made me more in love with the world and maybe a little sadder, if it's possible, about what we're doing to it. And more committed to doing everything I can to try to, you know, be a part of the change, you know, be the change you want to see in terms of working in any small way I can to whether it's getting, you know, solar panels or next car is going to be electric or whatever I can afford, you know, stuff
right,
like that.
Right, right.
Because this is our one world. I'm sorry. I'm not going to Mars.
No, I think
this is it.
Plenty here that we can look at, and plenty here we need to save and maintain. And that's the way I feel too.
This is heaven. We're walking around in heaven. We are walking around in heaven, and I guess I felt that more than ever when I was there. Mm. It's just more than ever.
And just to feed off that, I've heard you say that you want people to know they're braver than they think they are. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think that we don't give ourselves enough. I think we are bombarded with fearful stories. I mean, this, what's going on in the world is incredibly terrifying, and we react to it as we need to react to it to keep ourselves safe. But I do believe that we have so many more resources inside of ourselves to face whatever it is we need to face. And I think going out into nature can help bring that out in us, can help us understand that, you know, we are part of all this.
Yeah.
And but just in terms of bravery, I mean, I encountered in myself doing these trips, you know, interviewing these people off the grid for the river at night. I had to vet them, and I had to go to these rather frightening settings deep in the woods. I was like, what do you want to die, Erica? You know, but I didn't. I just wanted to get, the juice, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted the juice for the story because, you know, I'm a bad cook and I don't have any children of my own, and this is what I do best, you know.
Right.
But I also felt that I learned to trust my instinct about people, for example. Every fearful thing, everything that we do that makes us face our fear, we learn. We don't even realize it.
Right.
But you learn a little something, and you can use that again.
Definitely.
You can grow that bravery.
Yeah, definitely. We don't go back to our original size when we start developing that courage or that bravery muscle, for sure.
Great way of putting it. We don't go back to our original size.
Yeah.
You know, get giant, people. You know, get massive.
Well, I haven't read your other books, Into the Jungle, The River at Night, but they are now on my to-read list.
What's wrong with you?
I'm just glad your publicist came my way. So,
Well, now then I'll say you'll go to the jungle. Well, maybe not.
The book we talked about today, Girl in Ice, and my guest, Erica Forensic, and just go to her website and look at that magnificent iceberg there. It tells you a lot. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Erica? We've jumped all over the place. We've talked about the book. We've talked about some of your characters. We've talked about your trip in Greenland. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I think as a writer, it's taken me 35 years to get a book published. And I think that whatever you're trying to do in life, just don't give up on it. And the only thing that kept me going was this little kernel of belief, this kryptonite heart thing in me that said, I have something to offer someone, and I have something to offer a reader. So whatever it is you're trying to do, and however badly you're beaten back, just you just cannot give up.
I love it.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for ending that on such a great note there. I know listeners can find out much more about you and your work at ericaforensic.com. And you spell forensic, F-E-R-E-N-C-I-K. And just type in Google, girl in ice in Google and it pops right up. So, Erica, such a pleasure talking with you today. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It was a total joy.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicky's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.